Welcome to the Hard Water Fishing Show. Jeff and Jason talk tactics, gear, and ice fishing legends.
Welcome to the Hard Water Fishing Show, Season 4, Episode 1. It is the third week of October 2020. We have a great show. This is going to be our kickoff for Season 4, and we have a great interview at the end. So, Jason, are you ready to be here? Ready to go?
I am here. I am ready. I am excited. I am all about moving into ice fishing. It was 33 and a half degrees this morning when I woke up in Iowa. And raining. Beautiful weather. All right, so on our Season 4 kickoff show, we're going to preview some of the thoughts we have on the upcoming season. We're going to tell some of the old stories we've already told. We're also going to do an interview here at the end of the show with Brian Oberfell of Widowmaker Lures, so that'll be really exciting.
This morning, I woke up in Duluth, and it was 28 degrees, and there was snow on the ground.
Did you mean to be in Duluth, or did you just find yourself there by accident?
Well, I guess I kind of meant to be there.
It's always really weird when you wake up places you have no recollection of getting to. I just want to make sure you're okay. So that's good. I'm glad to hear it.
No, it was. They have MEA weekend in Minnesota, which is like a couple days off for everybody. And so we were out and about this weekend, so that was kind of fun.
Yeah, everybody else in the rest of the country just went, M.A. who, what, huh? Nobody knows what that is outside of Minnesota.
It's insane. In Minnesota, there's 2 days that they don't go to school for like a teacher conference, and so people in Minnesota typically go do things during that time. They go on holiday. In my case, I went on holiday without my children.
Ooh,
so
that's even better. No, that's terrible. You should have taken the kids.
That's terrible.
I can't believe you did that.
All right. I don't think we're talking ice fishing anymore. So this year, we have the same format to the show. So the first thing we're going to do is talk about our beverage that we're drinking tonight. Jason, what do you got?
You know, I actually gave this more thought than I typically do. And I thought, you know, I am going to try to increase my beer repertoire this year, whatever.
That's a really fancy word,
well,
Jay.
Well, the beer I have is particularly fancy. It is Dogfish Head 60-Minute IPA India Pale Ale.
Wow.
Right?
Really, Jay?
I know.
That is impressive.
I'm not going to like this. I can just tell, but I'm going to drink it anyway. It's got too many things. Hoppy, slew of hops, boiled with hops, more hops with hops. It's very hoppy. You'll like it. It's right up your alley.
Here we go.
Ready?
Ooh, that was healthy.
It is. Let's see what it tastes like. I have no idea. Oh, it's like I just chewed on carpet.
Don't say that. It looks really good. It looks like a six. Jason, it's a green can. It looks like a 16-ouncer.
No, it's a 19-ouncer. I got some work.
19-ouncer.
To do here.
What is a 19-ouncer? I've never heard of such a thing.
Chaser. All right. Go on. What do you got? I might have to get a Coors Light to chase this with.
Oh, boy. So going with my theme, I have from Castle Danger Brewery. So in Two Harbors, I went to the Castle Danger Brewery this weekend. And that was kind of fun. So we went there and had a few drinks. And one of the ones that I tried was George Hunter Stout. So it is a stout. It's like a nitro stout. Think of like a, what's that really dark German beer?
Black and Tan?
I don't think it's called a Black and Tan. What is it called? Heineken.
Oh, Heineken.
Not Heineken.
Heineken's not dark.
No, not Heineken. It's the other dark one. Anyways, it's really good and dark and foamy and... So here it goes. I'm going to open it up.
That was nice. How was that?
It is delicious. It is so good. It is like creamy.
Is there
anything
in our bylaws that you remember?
We have bylaws?
Is there anything in our bylaws, which I don't think we have any, that prevents me from switching beers mid-show?
You can switch beers mid-show.
I'm gonna try a little bit more of this to see if it grows on me. But I don't know. I don't know why people drink this stuff.
You should have got a Castle Danger George Hunter Stout because they are magnificent.
All right.
So I was actually in Two Harbors.
This literally tastes like dogfish head. If you boiled dogfish head, this is, I suspect, what it would taste like. And it's truth in advertising, so I don't know why I was, you know, I don't know why I'm surprised. All right, we should move on. Moving on.
So what you're saying is this brewery is not going to be one of our sponsors, is what you're saying, Jay.
I don't believe they will reach out to us and say, can you give us more stuff. But I would say if you're into citrusy, hoppy things that taste like carpet, you should drink this beer. All right.
I might actually like it. I think it's a taste problem.
Oh, it's probably right up your alley. Right up your alley.
All right. So here we go. So go ahead.
No, I was going to say, how many downloads do we have? How many? Did people find us and listen to us over the summer?
Yeah, a few people do. We don't get as many downloads during the off season as we do when we're podcasting, but we picked up about 5,000 downloads. We're at like 54,000 or so.
That is not bad.
Not bad at all.
We really appreciate everybody taking time out of their lives to listen to us jabber on about ice fishing and other random stuff. So thank you. Thank you very much. You can find us on our website, hardwatershow.com. I had made a pledge last year to do better about Instagram over the summer. Just as no surprise to those that listen loyally, I failed. So, however, I will be once again attending to the Instagram page more over this season. And we're on our Facebook page as well. You can find us, hardwatershow.com. Apparently, we have a YouTube video. Still never been to it.
It's there.
I'm telling you, never been there. We have 14 subscribers, apparently, so we are kicking butt on YouTube.
I don't even know how many we have. That was from last year. So now.
We might have doubled to 30. Who knows? 100%.
Hold on. I'm looking it up.
Looking it up right now. Now that we're back on season, I'm paying more attention to our email. You can email us at hardwatershow@gmail.com. We have gotten a few legends that people have sent us. We'll try to work those in this season. Thank you so much for sharing your ice fishing stories with us. It's awesome. People have so much fun ice fishing. And thank you for sharing that with us. Also, just want to continue to mention that you can, from our website, buy Hardwater Fishing Show gear. There's a link to that on our website. And also to Patron is something very different.
If
you will drink it, even on the show if you request. No.
A patron.
It's a way to send us money. So if you feel like sending us money, we'll always take it. Jeff and I bankroll this particular enterprise, and it gets harder every year, I think, to hide the expenses in places our wives won't find it. So, you know, feel free. So... Right? We are a sponsor-free show up to this point, and actually that's mainly by choice. We haven't sought out such things in advertising, mainly because we want to continue to be able to give our honest review of absolutely anything and everything that we use or think. And so that's why we don't tend to be sponsored.
Absolutely. And I think part of it, too, for us, the sponsor part is just like we can kind of set our own schedule and stuff then, too, right?
I thought it was because of our journalistic honesty.
Oh, well, yes, you're right. Journalistic honesty, yes. You're totally right. Is that an oxymoron? Journalistic honesty. I don't know. We're about ice fishing here. There's no talk about politics or anything even close to that.
We'll delete that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Current events.
Bleep that out. We're ready
to move to current events.
Yeah. So reader news and current events. We got lots of reader news questions to go through. Before we get into those, kind of some sad news, Jay. I know you told me this first, that there will be no St. Paul Ice Fishing Show this year.
You know, I went there for the first time last year and was so excited to do it again. And then here we are. There are a lot of the smaller bait shops around are still doing some shows. So make sure to check out those small shops when they do. I know Hank's Bait in Waterloo is going to put one on in Clear Lake. It's got one coming up there The Clear Lake Bait Shop up there is going to do one. And I know there's probably some up in the Minnesota regions as well. So check your local listings.
Yeah, there's actually, I posted it out on the Facebook page, but Clam, not as an endorsement, but just they have a really good page on their website that shows a lot of the upcoming events. So this weekend, Joe's Sporting Goods in St. Paul had a medium-sized event. And then it looks like the one in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, also Up North Sports Show is happening. And then there's a bunch of them in November, which like Clear Lake Bait and Tackle in Clear Lake, Iowa, November 6th and 8th. I don't see the one that you mentioned, Jason.
Oh, Hanks.
Hanks, but I know that's coming up too. So.
Yep.
So, yeah, so there are still some shows out there. They're just a little smaller ones, and, you know, the big show won't be there, but we'll still have plenty of stuff to figure out for gear before everything freezes out.
Yep, absolutely. And I think things will start, you know, I think probably a lot of these outfits are trying to refigure out how do they launch products without the shows, because that's usually that product launch for them. And so I'm sure their little advertising guys are, and gals are busy hanging out in a boardroom somewhere figuring out how to do that. So stuff will be coming.
Exactly. All right. So let's get into some reader questions, Jay. You ready?
Already. Yeah, let's do it. I'm sure they've been holding on to these things all summer long.
They're like, gosh, I really want to answer this. You know, and what's funny is I actually keep a little notebook of all kinds of ideas and thoughts about the show. So I'm sure other people are keeping
that too,
right?
That's what makes this relationship work, is you plan and I am just in the moment. I live in the moment.
Well, that's awesome. I'm glad you're willing to do this with me, Jay, because, you know, people probably wouldn't want to hear just me ramble on for this long.
And they wouldn't probably want to hear me ramble on either, because it'd be so damn random. Like, where's this guy going with this? So it's good. It works.
So, Jason, I think the first question we wanted to talk about was boots. Somebody had a question about boots. Jacob.
Yeah.
Asked about what's the best bang for your buck? He's looking at Mickey Mouse boots or Muck brand boots.
So we've had, I think we even had an episode once on boots. We've talked about them extensively on and off over the years. I bought last year a pair of Norfin Klondike fishing winter boots. And I used them for most of the season last year, or part of the season last year, including a trip to Canada. It was pretty cold. I loved them. Absolutely love them. They combine kind of that rubber boot with a nice liner. So it's got a removable liner that you can pull out and dry out at the end of each night, which I think's number one important. And that's why I don't like muck boots for ice fishing, because I think your feet sweat a lot in that type of a boot. And if you're fishing multiple days in a row, you got to be able to dry that boot out. Or even, you know, if you want, have the ability to have an extra pair of liners if you need to switch liners halfway through a long day, depending on what you're doing. The other thing on the Norfins that I think's just kind of a neat thing is it's got a flip-out ice cleat on the bottom of it. Take that off before you walk on someone's floor, by the way. But you can flip it.
Or ice shack roof.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. Make sure those aren't flipped down when you're walking on Jeff's ice shack roof, helping to kick snow off. But you flip this little deal down on the bottom, and then if it's icy out, you've got that cleat. You don't have to carry, you know, cleats and stuff with you and switch into them. So I really, really like that. That's a really nice feature, and they're comfortable, and they're... The other thing I say about them is they're super light compared to any sort of pack boots. So they got my vote. I'm sure there's all sorts of boots out there that get the job done. Some of it comes down to personal preference, and that's where I'm at today. May change some other year, but that's where I'm at today.
You know, waterproof is really important, whether you choose rubber or, you know, Gore-Tex or whatever. I think some of those... advancements in the kind of technical gear is really where things have been more comfortable in the last few years. You know, Gore-Tex or fabrics and things that only let the water keep the water out but let you breathe out. I think those are handy. They're not always the cheapest, but they are out there. I have a couple different pairs of boots depending on what's going on. On the lower end, I have those. My kids wear them all the time. They're What are they? Gosh, they're like kind of like moon boots almost. But I wear some of those slip-on ones for kind of warmer days. But then I have these really extreme pack boots for the really cold days that have a liner that you want to take out every day. And I think we talked about this last year, too, that your socks are probably as big of a deal as your boots yes. are. Bringing an extra pair of boots might or socks might be worth buying a cheaper pair of boots and just bringing two pairs of socks, right? Because it's the wetness that gets you.
You never like to be damp in certain areas.
Go to any store, buy yourself a pair of pack boots, get some good socks. You'll probably be fine. You want them to be waterproof is probably the big thing there. So
I want to go with the warmest boot that's the lightest. I tell you what, the older I've gotten, the more it, you know, you can trim a couple of pounds off each foot because you're going with a lighter boot. That's a big deal after a long day.
Yeah, I guess I don't value the weight quite as much in ice fishing. Now, if I was going to go bird hunting or if I was going to go hunting and walking, but, you know, it depends on, I guess, if you're walking 2 miles to your ice fishing spot,
I'm
then
weight's going to be a big deal. Me, so that it's a, it, you know, I don't.
But if you're riding a snowmobile and you're just driving out to your spot, then the weight probably isn't as big a deal as the Correct. Warmth.
Yep.
So it depends on what you're doing.
Okay.
All right. I think we covered the boots. We didn't really talk about Mickey Mouse boots.
I don't even know what those are. No idea.
I kind of know what they are. I think they're some kind of military surplus thing. People talk about them all the time. I don't really know that much about them. I've never worn a pair. I feel like in the forums and stuff, you hear about them every couple of years. So I don't know. I'd have to rely on somebody else for Mickey Mouse boots. You know, as far as the Muck brand boots, I think, Jason, you addressed that as far as not having a liner, and that's not preferable. Somebody had a question about First Flasher. I think we've covered this before, but basically any flasher you can buy out there today is going to do everything you ever need to do. So just go buy a, you know, FL8 or base model, whatever brand you choose, I think you're going to be totally fine and happy.
I think, too, there's some real bargains on the used flasher market right now because people are going to the Helix and different things. So, like, the old-style Hummingbird, Vexlar, Markham flashers, there's a lot of them coming on the market on the used end of things.
Yeah, I think you can find, like, the non-Vexlar brands, you can find some better deals on, but I feel like those Vexlars hold on to their price pretty well from what I've seen. I mean, you know, you can buy a you can buy a new FL8 for, like, you know, $280 or a used one for $240. You know, to me, you're not getting your value out of that with a battery a few years old. But, you know, if you can get a Hummingbird Flasher 35 like I have that works great and it's 4 years old and it's, you know, $150, it's probably worth it. But, you know, you're probably going to have to buy a new battery anyways with a used one. So
maybe.
I mean, mine is original and it's like a decade old, but I don't think that's normal.
There's nothing normal about you, buddy.
I know that, Jason. Thanks for reminding me. Thanks
You're
for reminding me.
In every way, sir.
I this appreciate that.
Dogfish head to you.
Cheers. There's a really good question here that actually relates to my summer fishing. So Chris asked, should a person be using bigger baits at first ice, like most do at the end of the boating season? So this is interesting because I fish Mille Lacs a lot in Minnesota, just because that's where my home base is. And I was up there a couple weeks ago, and the fish liked the big baits. I don't know if they have the feed bag on, but I'm telling you, the 6-inch sucker minnows, I mean, they just loved those things, right? Like, I ran out of them. But I've never had a lot of experience in any ice fishing season fishing with the big baits like that. I typically don't use big ones like that. I don't know, Jason, do you have any other perspective on that?
You know, I should, but I don't because usually by the time I get, like, to Minnesota, I'm never on first ice. So I don't ever think about it. You know what I mean? Because by the time I usually get up there to fish walleyes, I'm not fishing First Ice anymore. Down here, you know, for panfish and stuff, no, I wouldn't say that I'm using anything different size-wise. I mean, maybe a little bigger, but I tend to start with a bigger bait anyway and then downsizes if things aren't happening. So I don't know if that answers the question.
I think it depends. Yeah, it depends on the species, mm-hmm. too. So, like, if I think about tip-up fishing for northerns, yeah, then we're using bigger minnows, right? You're using bigger baits. But for walleyes, I mean, I use fatheads or, you know, kind of medium-sized minnows and that kind of stuff more often.
Yeah, I do think you probably are better off sticking with the, you know, if walleyes and stuff, that bigger bait, yet early ice, depending on when that happens technically, and then work from there. Yeah, so I think so.
All right, so this is one of our active listeners, Zach. He's pretty active on our show and making comments, so he was asking any tips for simple cooking on the ice. So this is definitely a Jason question, because the cooking is all Jason. I eat a sandwich, and, you know, even a hot dog that I have to heat up is beyond what I would be doing out in the ice. But Jason has a very different perspective. So do you have any different meals that you prepare early ice, or any different cooking you do out in the ice?
You know, I think, you know, when I'm by myself, I am just like a raccoon in a trash can. I mean, I don't care what I eat. I eat whatever. Cooking tends to be more when I have company or with people. But I think there's so many one-pot things you can do. You know, you can heat up a can of Dinty Moore beef stew over a one-burner stove, you know. I've gone to that little camp stove that I can use the four-season gas on, just the isopropanol. I don't know the name of that gas, but those little canister stoves. Because it'll light even when it's super, super cold out, away from like a white gas stove or even a propane stove.
Those things are great, Jay. I mean, that was like the game changer, because they're compact, mm-hmm. and they light and they work. And yeah, I like those.
So I guess what awesome. I could say, maybe the method would dictate the simple cooking. So the number one method I'm using now almost all the time on ice fishing to cook or heat something up is I take either a Ziploc bag, a really good quality Ziploc bag, or a food saver type bag, vacuum sealed bag, and you just heat a pot of water, boil, get it boiling, chuck your food in there that's in that Ziploc or that food saver, heat it up real good, and you can either eat right out of that or dump it into a paper plate or whatever. So there's no dirty pan or nothing like that, and everything's already prepared at home. You just put it in the pot of boiling water, let it boil up, heat up real good, and eat it. Heat and serve. So that's how I heat stuff up on the ice, because it's real simple. You just scoop up lake water out of the hole, heat it up to boiling, put the package in there, and off you go. So maybe that answers the question.
Yeah, that's actually, I kind of forgot about that, but that's perfect. I remember we did that on the ice last year, and you bought those kind of resealable bags from Amazon, and I kind of remember those were kind of not exactly super awesome.
Not going to do that again. Nope. That was a trial error kind of deal, and they did not work. They were a reusable silicone type bag, supposed to save the environment and all that jazz. And nope, back to food saver or Ziplocs.
Yep. Excellent. All right. So I think we got a lot of mileage out of that. That was good information, Jay, because when you cook for me on the ice, it's important for people to know how you're cooking for me.
Well, I do enjoy, you know, I do enjoy cooking out there. I don't know why, but it's kind of fun.
No, I appreciate it all the time. I'm glad you do. Otherwise, I'd be eating a sandwich. So.
All right.
Somebody asked one more question, Jay, and I don't know, this is probably a whole episode, but we can touch on it a little bit. Bucket Ryan asked a bucket list ice trip.
Ooh. A bucket list. I struggle with the bucket list concept, because that means I think I'm going to only do it once in my life. You know what I mean? Isn't that the bucket list mm-hmm. concept? Or I'm dying from something?
Or you want to at least do it once before you're dead. No longer, before you're dead. So yeah, right.
It always feels morbid. Bucket list trip. You go first. I'll pass.
All right. So I got a couple.
One.
First thing we did already, ice fishing on Lake Superior. That was pretty cool. I mean, to me, that's qualifies in the bucket list territory. I would like to go ice fishing in the mountains. I know we've been invited a couple times by people who ice fish for trout in the mountains. That would be cool. I think something related to like Alaska or really out there would be cool. So those are a couple ideas I would have.
You know what my buck, I'm sitting here thinking like what would be one thing that if someone said, I would be like, I'm on it. I want to go ice fishing in Russia. Because I see those Russian like ice fishing videos and those folks are nuts. And I want to go do that.
Yep, I'm with you on that one, Shay.
Right? I'm trying to think of like what would be just so off the hook and so different. I don't even know if it's Russia, but some Eastern
European kind of thing.
You know, somewhere way up with those people, crazy people up there that ice fish. I want to do that. There's something completely different. Because I just think the techniques and the way they do it and everything's so different than what we're used to over here that it would just be a mind-blowing deal all the way around.
Absolutely. No, I think you're right. We're always looking for new experiences, right?
Absolutely.
So. Cool. All right. Well, there's a lot more questions, and I appreciate everybody submitting them. And, you know, we'll get to some more next time. Unfortunately, we can't get to all of them every time, but really appreciate everybody and their spending time and giving questions and interest in the show. So moving on, kind of fishing report. Clearly, there's no ice out there yet, so we're not going to give any ice fishing reports. But because it's our first show and our kickoff show, we thought we'd highlight a couple things from this summer. So, Jay, what was your summer highlight of open water fishing?
So we went to the Boundary Waters this summer, my wife and I and my brother and his child and a good friend of mine and his child. And we had a great time. And we went up to Lac-La-Croix is what I call it.
LaCroix?
Yeah, we were arguing about the name. Lac-La-Croix? No, Lac-La-Croix. Anyway, we had a good time with that. We had a good time with it.
Oh, boy.
And we had great fishing. So we camped on an island. Almost didn't have a campsite. The place was packed. So it's 7 o'clock. Every campsite on this, when we got into the lake, was full. The next campsite was like almost a mile and a half, 2 miles away, and it's 7 o'clock. And we're like, okay, we're going to keep paddling. And we've been traveling since 8:30 that morning. And so we just kept paddling, and we had the worst campsite the first night. Oh, my gosh, it was the worst campsite I ever stayed on. But it was a campsite, so I'm not begrudging. I mean, this thing was so steep, I had to brace my foot on a rock. And then as I fell asleep, I would slowly end up at the bottom of the tent. And then I'd wake up and push myself back up to the top of it. It was like it was on an angle. And then the next morning, the campsite around the front opened up with this island we were on. And it was the most beautiful campsite I've stayed in all my years in the Boundary Waters. So, I mean, we went from the worst to the best in the space of a day. So we definitely had a good trip. We're able to catch walleyes for supper anytime we wanted them. And smallies were snapping. And walleyes were snapping. It was just a really great fishing trip. Nothing there to complain about at all on the fishing front. So it was great.
Awesome. Oh, that sounds like a good time. And like most of your stories of the Boundary Waters, you had a good time, and yet there was a struggle.
There was certainly a struggle that first night. Yeah, we had some really long faces in the canoes, and there may have even been talk, you know, if we just paddle into Canada, they'll pick us up, and we'll have a place to sleep tonight.
God.
So, but we didn't do it. We stayed the course and found a port in the storm. So,
well, and I always say you guys need to work on your marketing for your trips to the Boundary Waters, because it always sounds out like you would not believe how bad it was. But we had a really good time.
That sums up the Boundary Waters, though. I mean, I always tell people, I said, if you have the ability to be the most physically miserable you've ever been in your whole life one minute and having the time of your life the next, then you should go to the Boundary Waters. Because if you don't have that mindset, at some point, it's going to ruin your day.
So I guess you better put ice fishing in the Boundary Waters on your bucket list.
It's on my list, but it's not a bucket list item.
Yeah, well, yeah, back to the bucket list problem, right? So, all right, so I didn't really have a specific story. I spent most of my summer fishing Mille Lacs because that's where my ice shack lives, and I camp out in my ice shack in the summer, which is pretty awesome. So, you know, we caught a bunch of walleyes. You know, you can't keep any walleyes really on Mille Lacs, but you can catch a lot of them. So it was a good summer, caught a bunch of fish. And my favorite highlight is every time I catch a nice fish is sending it to my friends so they can see my
fish. It's quite annoying, actually. So he sends me fish.
Like, oh, got another 20.
Working on a car. Sends me a fish. What are you doing? Working on the house. He sends me a fish. What are you doing? Working on a car.
I got another 20, you know. I mean, I got to do something with this. So I got to share my... So that was probably my summer highlight. There wasn't one really... Unfortunately, there wasn't one big fish I can pick out. You know, there was a lot of nice fish, but nothing trophy size this summer. But still, pretty good bite, except for August. August was terrible, but the rest of the summer was pretty good.
Well, good for you for catching fish all summer. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, it's hard. All right, so we're not going to talk about, again, keeping with the theme of the kickoff show here, we're moving on to our gear section, but we're going to have a whole gear episode about the new gear, and we've been doing lots of research, or at least the research department, which I am lead of at Hardwater Fishing Show, has been doing the research. Jason will bring in the support eventually, I'm sure.
Usually I Google things while we're talking.
And I go, look at this cool new thing I found. And he goes, Jason will go, yeah, that's awesome. Anyways, so we both... the one gear thing I will talk about is related to my summer. So for my boat, I was lucky enough to get this really awesome trolling motor for the front of my boat that has spot lock and follow the contour and stuff, which is like highly recommended. And everybody should have one of these things. It's pretty sweet. But
I feel like your resource allocation's messed up.
Did I overspend on my summer fishing? Is that what you're
exactly.
saying?
Exactly. Yes. You could have perhaps purchased the Panoptics had you invested the same amount of money in your winter fishing.
You are correct. Just and I don't think
that out.
Yeah. But here's where it links into the ice fishing, Jay, is that I did get a Helix 7, and that does have a kit that you can use it in the winter also.
I feel like that's still... I don't know. I feel like... I just hope this isn't indicating kind of a lack of, you know, like next thing you know, you leave this show and start a bass show or something.
So you're saying I like cheated on ice fishing by buying a summer fishing toy?
I feel like you're, I kind of feel like maybe I don't know, man. I don't know what to think about this.
Well, I'll don't worry. I have plans to put some investment in my ice fishing gear.
If I see like a Bassmasters catalog at your house, I might have to start looking for a new partner.
Oh boy, it's getting rough in here today. All right, let's change.
Of course,
the subject.
I don't know if I can find one that does all the tech, all the research, puts the show notes out, and make sure the thing gets published every week. But maybe they're out there.
Maybe they are. You're going to get letters, Jason. I won't see them. They're just going to go right to you. You don't need Jeff. I can help with
the
tech.
Or I already get those letters, Jeff.
Oh, boy.
So you're going to retrofit your Helix 7 for ice fishing?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep, they sell a kit. And I know last year we talked about the Helix 5 a little bit because your brother has one. And we said that, you know, it was a little small. So the Helix 7 is a little bigger, so I get a little more real estate. But, you know, we'll try it out. I mean, we'll add it to the arsenal. I'll have the Hummingbird and a Vexilar and then the Helix. So we'll see how it
works.
That's
awesome. I'm looking forward to seeing that thing in action, to be honest.
Yeah, it's kind of nice. I don't know. The whole side imaging, down imaging thing I'm still getting used to, but we'll figure it out.
Very cool.
All right, any other gear mentions you want to give, Jay?
Well, I think far as just a show preview, I think we had talked about, we're going to have a long and invigorating discussion on snowmobile versus four-wheeler this year, right? We're going to talk about that. As far as new gear, I think there's some new stuff coming out in the tech stuff in the imaging department, so we'll probably have a good conversation about that at some point. Something you probably could have purchased had you spent all your money in open water fishing. So yes, I know there's a couple new ice shacks out. There's actually some really cool lures that are still being developed and coming out. In our interview with Brian Oberfell of Widowmaker Lures that we'll have on later, he talks about some of the new things that they're releasing. So I do think there's going to be some really interesting stuff that's coming out, which is always, we do like to geek out on all that stuff.
The gear is an important part of the whole thing, right? So you kind of segued into some, what's the right word? What do you call it? Not premonition.
Foreshadowing.
Foreshadowing with our gear and talking about new gear. So, really the show is about the kickoff for the year. So, Jason got into that a little bit. One of the things we're going to work on this year to improve the show and make things better, which we're always trying to do, is to get more interviews on. And Brian Oberfell from Widowmaker Lures will be our first interview that we're going to have at the end of the show here. And we're not replacing, because we're always still have the legends section at the end of our show. But sometimes a legend might be our interview with a legend or somebody that talks about ice fishing.
Or a legend maker. Brian, who runs this lure company, really, he's in the business of creating legends, if you think about it. Yeah, so I just, it's great every time we talk about this. We'll rehash some old subjects. We'll come up with some new subjects this season. Trying to get more interviews, I think, is one of our big goals for the whole season to give. Jeff and I have often said we're not experts in ice fishing, so we'd sure like to have you listen to some.
That's going to be the new intro to the section. We're not experts in ice fishing, but we'd sure like you to listen some, so here you go. Yeah, so, I mean, we'll talk about gear, as always. And I feel like our seasons kind of have this ebb and flow. The beginning of the season is a lot about gear. And the end of the season is more often about experiences, right? Because we haven't had those yet. We're not ice fishing yet. So we talk kind of the prep part of getting on into the gear and then the kind of the actual doing of going on trips and stuff. Mm-hmm. So,
well, I think with that, are we ready for our interview with Brian?
Absolutely.
This is the Hard Water Fishing Show with Jeff and Jason.
Jeff and Jason.
Jeff and I are here with Brian Oberfell of Widowmaker Lures. And Brian is going to talk with us about his company, his lures, and we're going to learn all sorts of neat stuff. So, Brian, question for you first is, how did you get into the lure making business? And tell us where you're located at, too, if you would, please.
Yeah, absolutely. We're located in the Iowa City area, just outside of Iowa City, Iowa, in a small town called Swisher, Iowa.
How big is Swisher?
Swisher's just a couple thousand people, just a little, real small town outside Iowa. It's right in between Iowa City and Cedar Rapids.
Okay.
So how I got started was, it was kind of a weird deal. I actually worked in corrections for years with probation and parole. And one night we were at work and one of my coworkers wanted to call the owner of Widowmaker. He was looking to buy some. We were all looking to buy some Cadiz cane. We were out of them, could never find the purple. So he's like, I'm going to call this guy. I found his name. It's 9 o'clock on a Tuesday night. And I was like, no, don't call him. Don't call him. It's way too late. Well, he proceeded to call him anyway from my phone. He calls the guy up and he says, hey, we need some of these Cadiz canes. We can't find them anywhere. And it was an older gentleman that answered. And he said, yeah, actually I'm slowing down and I'm looking to get out of the business. He's like, and so instantly my buddy starts prying him about the business and about buying it and how much he's asking and all kinds of in-depth questions. And clearly at 9 o'clock on a Tuesday night, he didn't want to hear it. And he said, I already got somebody to buy the business. I already got somebody lined up. I'm not interested in selling it to you. He's like, I already got somebody pretty much lined up to buy it. He goes, I can definitely sell you some lures. He's like, give me a call back tomorrow. So the next day, since he called him from my phone, obviously I was the one that got to call him up and try getting some of these Cadis canes. So I called him up the next day, and right out of gates, you know, he's like, hey, you know, I already got somebody to buy the business. He was kind of standoffish. I said, that's fine. I'm just looking to get some Cadis canes. And it's one of the purple Cadis canes. They were getting really hard to find. And so I put a nice order of Cadis canes in. And lo and behold, about a month later, the owner gave me a call and said, hey, the first guy fell through. Are you still interested? Well, I really was never interested in the first place, but it was only about an hour and a half away. So I figured I'd go take a look. And I went and took a look, and we looked at it all, and I was very interested. I came back and I was engaged to my wife at the time. And I told her, I said, hey, we gotta seriously think about this. I'm really interested. She goes, are you crazy? We're getting married this summer. You want to buy a lure company? So I ended up taking her down the following week. We looked at it all, and we ended up taking it over. We went over down there and trained for about 2.5 weeks and moved everything to North Liberty, Iowa at the time, and start rolling with it. And that was the winter of 2011, 2012. So we've been in business obviously ever since, and it's growing substantially since then. And it's been a lot of fun.
That's like really cool. So did your buddy go into it with you, or did you just bought it out from underneath him?
No. So my buddy, he's just a businessman by trade. I mean, he's always trying to weasel something. So he was more just prying the guy. And like I said, he had no interest, but he just wanted to know numbers. And yeah, lo and behold, 3 months later, I owned the business. So it was kind of crazy. Obviously I had some lure. I did some little tinkering when I was a kid, you know, between tying crappie jigs and stuff like that. And, you know, casting lead sinkers and lead jig heads and stuff. So I knew a little bit about lure making, but nothing on the commercial level. That's for sure.
So when you bought it, how many employees did you have?
None. So what happened is the business had been declining. The guy's daughter actually ran it till 2002, the Palmer family out of over by Moline, Illinois. And then the daughter passed away, the daughter that ran it in 2002. Mm. So her father and mother actually took it over along with her daughter and ran it for the next 10 years.
Okay.
But essentially they just sold the customers that came to them. So business had declined over those 10 years. So the time we got it, it was pretty small scale. I mean, I remember that first year my wife and I, you know, put in a lot of hours. And then at the end of the year, you see how much you make and you're like, oh my, what are we doing? Like we're making literally, you know, $2 an hour. Like this is crazy. But obviously we decided to stick with it, and it's been a lot of fun ever since.
So how many folks do you employ now?
So right now it's myself. Then we got two other employees on the payroll. Okay. And then we do have several other people that help out with piecework as well. Like we have a lot of college girls, stay-at-home moms, stuff like that. Even family and friends that help out with piecework with packaging. Packaging is kind of a nightmare. It's a very time-consuming job, but obviously you need to get it done. So yeah, we got some great help that helps us with that as well.
How do you create a lure? Like, how do you decide this fish is going to eat this thing that looks like a Wonder Bread package? I mean, how do you know that?
So the first thing you got to do is with the body style. You know, we start with the prototype from there, and we test a lot of prototypes. We test probably, I'd say, at least 5 times as many that ever come to market. So first of all, we test the prototypes. Once we got a good feeling about a prototype, it's catching on, it's catching fish, we think it's a one to put in the lineup, then we'll start going through and do like strength tests on them. Obviously make sure the hook pairing's strong enough. So we test a lot of that. And then obviously you got paint jobs from there. And the big thing the last number of years is obviously glow in the dark. You know, originally we had 12 different paint colors. We used only two of them were glow in the dark. And now all of our new stuff, if you've seen it, almost everything is glow in the dark as well.
So what do you do with, like, you know, if you have somebody try out the lure, like Jason, who maybe doesn't catch as many fish, and maybe I'm using it and I catch more, like, how do you level that out?
Absolutely. Great question. For sure.
Yeah, beat me to it. Beat me to it.
Got to take into account their handicap. That's for sure. We send it out to a lot of different people, a lot of different regions, the different jigs that we're kind of working on as far as prototypes. That way we can get some good feedback all around, not only from Minnesota, but, you know, some of us Iowa guys use a lot smaller baits than they do up there. I say the fish are smarter. The guys from Minnesota like to say the fish are bigger up there, but that's still up for debate. Now we test them out all over. That way we get a good solid, you know, group feedback and go from there.
So you don't have like a tank full of fish at your house?
No, I do got a pond. So, but however, they're very aggressive in the pond. So
sure,
I could take anything down there, and odds are I would hook up with something. So No, we do.
Tell me more about where this pond is. No.
Yeah. Yeah. No, good question though, because we do test them in tanks as far as action.
Okay.
We have a new spoon we developed for this season that we're going to be releasing soon, and that was a big part of that. We're coming out with a tungsten spoon called the Slab Seeker spoon, and that was something that the spoon game's definitely new to us. So we wanted to test it in depth, make sure it had a great action, especially being made of tungsten. You don't want something to just sink down there and look like a rock down there bouncing around.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of testing involved, make sure it had an action we're really happy with. So
is that going to be your new hot lure this year then?
That is going to be our new hot lure for guys in Minnesota. That's for sure. We're making it in a 16th ounce tungsten, and a 32nd ounce tungsten.
Okay. So you sell your stuff in a variety of, I think I've seen it in stores and online. Where can people find your stuff if they're looking for it?
Yeah, they can go right to our website at www.widowmakerlures.com. You can buy direct from there. And we do have it in, we have somewhere upwards of around 300 stores throughout the Midwest. We're getting to be a little bit more on the East Coast that you can find it as well. All your local Tyson stores carry it,
oh.
Fleet Farm stores. Then we have a lot of great mom and pop bait shops throughout the Midwest that carry our products as well.
What is your favorite thing about what you do?
I think the favorite part is probably testing the new products. I'm always trying to improve, and even if it's some old patterns we're on, I'm always continuing to, you know, find a stronger hook, find a hook. I know a lot of complaints with the eyes on the tungsten hooks, you know, continue to drive forward, continue to offer literally the best product I can, whether it be like our jig boxes have became very popular. Last year we came out with a plastics holder, which was pretty cool. It was something I worked on for about a year and a half before it finally came to market, to get everything kind of tweaked exactly how we wanted it.
What's the hardest thing about what you do? What's the most challenging thing about your company, running your company?
I'd say the hardest thing is, well, with my company in particular, like being a, you know, ice fishing jig business mainly, it's just finding the time to get on the hard water. I love fishing the hard water.
Yeah.
I love getting on the ice, and it's tough. I mean, I used to do a lot of ice fishing, and now I'm lucky if I get out there a handful of times a year. Just obviously it coincides with our peak season. And so
I think you need to promote yourself to head tester.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what I was actually just running by the wife. She's the co-owner with me. And
yeah,
I got to start spending a lot more time on the water, get out there and do some, you know, product research and development, but she wasn't buying it. So
one thing we talk about a lot in the Hardwater Show is, you know, we are definitely not professionals. And we're kind of more real fishing, and you know, all of us have that, right? We would love to get out more. I'd love to be out every weekend, but you know, there's reality, there's life, there's family, there's other things going on. So I don't think you're out of the ordinary as far as ice fishermen go. So
absolutely. And being a smaller business, obviously we have the common small business struggles, you know, just with, we don't have the means of just hiring everybody for as far as, you know, we get questions once in a while, like, hey, why don't you do this? And why don't you do more videos or do, you know, it's tough. You know, obviously it's myself, I'm the owner. Like I said, we got a couple other people that work for us, but being a small business owner, you kind of got to be the jack of all trades, you know, to pull everything together.
Yeah, that digital content can be such a time suck, as Jeff knows. He does all our editing.
Editing, yes.
For looks. And it can really take, I mean, and that's hard because you're trying to balance that marketing and time and all that jazz. So, all right. So this is an important question. We're really hoping you get this one right. What's your favorite way to fish, ice fishing or open water?
Definitely ice fishing.
Good answer. Ooh, good answer. Absolutely. We're going to have to edit otherwise.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I like fishing on the hard water. I enjoy it. I personally love targeting crappies and perch through the ice. Is a lot of fun to me.
Okay.
Used to make quite a few trips out to like South Dakota, and even did some perch trips up to like Manitoba, and that was a blast.
So if you could only bring one lure along for crappie and one lure along for perch, what would you bring?
For crappie, I would go with our Lucky Lady in a purple and black pattern, size 12. That's kind of my go-to for crappie. If I'm fishing some dirty water, obviously I'll brighten it up to some of the fluorescent colors we have in that, but definitely Lucky Lady for crappie. Perch, I like probably a 5 mil dropper, probably like a pink polka dot with a plastic on it.
Right now, I should be ordering those off your website.
We're making a shopping list as you're speaking. Yes. So the question that I would have, so I know, you know, you said crappies and perch are kind of your number one target. Right now, I fish Mille Lacs a lot, which there's a few perch in that lake, but primarily it's walleyes. So what would you recommend for the walleye fisherman from a lure perspective?
So obviously, our new spoon. I mean, that's going to be a great, we did a lot of testing of that in Minnesota, and that's an awesome spoon. And when one of our glow patterns, I'd use that. It's a tungsten spoon. I'd probably use in the 1/16 ounce. What's nice about that is it has an oversized hook on it, so you can catch your perch on it, and you get into the walleyes, you can get those as well. You know, tip it with the minnow head, and it's a very good bait, that's for sure.
You know, we may have to delay this episode till after our annual ice fishing trip, just so Dave doesn't hear about that lure.
Yeah. Yeah. He somehow catches more fish than we do.
You'll find, and if you listen to enough of our shows, you'll find that we have a friend named Dave who, the goal is usually to beat Dave.
Yep.
Dave gives the lessons, huh?
Just in his own backwoodsy Park Rapids-y way. God bless him.
Oh boy. We usually have a legend at the end of every show. You know, we have 20 years of trips, and we kind of go into some things that happen when you go ice fishing, because lots of weird things happen when you go ice fishing.
Especially so, with these guys.
Yeah, especially with us. And we started this 20 years ago, so the story is from 20 years ago when we were much younger, probably a little more interesting.
Yeah, now it's more about, I can't find my glasses. Where'd my teeth go?
Yeah. Okay, we're not quite that old yet, but you know. But getting there. Can you share, like, ice fishing legend, a story that you had in your past that, like, just really sticks out in your mind of something that happened while you were out ice fishing?
Yeah, absolutely. I think one that comes to mind is back when I was a kid. I shouldn't say extreme kid. I was probably 15 years old at the time. My brother was like 17, and we were fishing in a tournament on the river, on the Mississippi River, and he had a cast on his arm at the time. Well, his bobber goes down. He's sitting there playing with his cast instead of paying attention to his bobber. So I reach across him, grab his rod, set the hook, and he didn't think nothing of it. He was kind of daydreaming. And I get the fish up to the bottom of the ice, and here it's a huge crappie. He has to reach down. He grabs the crappie with his good arm, pulls the crappie up, and here was like a 14.5-inch crappie.
Wow.
Well, so the crappie ended up winning the tournament. So we had a huge debate, and still do, about whose fish it is. I mean, he would have never caught it, clearly, if I wanted to set the hook and pulled it up. So we ended up getting that fish mounted. So it's kind of cool. We got it. That's actually at my parents' house. So that's kind of a cool memory and story every time we see it. And we still debate whose fish it really was and who should have got that prize money.
That's a great story. I like that one.
Yeah.
And it comes up every time you see the fish and you're in the same room, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. It was fun telling my kids about it too, that it's my crappie. I caught it on his pole when he wasn't paying attention. So.
That's yeah, awesome. I think, I don't know. That's a tough, I don't know what the jury and judge would say about that one. So that argument will go on forever, probably. That's awesome.
Will. Yeah.
Brian, anything else you want to share while we got you?
Just looking forward to a great season. Hopefully we get some nice cold weather and lock everything up early and hold it late.
Yeah. Are you guys going to be at any ice fishing shows this year? If there are any, are you scheduled to be at any?
Yeah, we are. Obviously we got some bait shop shows that we're doing. We're doing Hank's Live Bait out of Waterloo, Iowa.
Yep.
We're doing Stands out of Milford, Iowa. Then we obviously got the big shows. Like, we got St. Paul, obviously, first week of December. And then we do a show in Detroit, Chicago. Then we do the Madison Fishing Expo at the end of the year. That's in February. It's another great show. But yeah, hopefully, we'll kind of touch and go, obviously, right now. I know they're still planning for the best, but we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I'm hoping. I'm hopeful. So we'll see what happens. So Brian, if you want to give everybody your website again, and we'll say thank you very much for joining us tonight.
Awesome. Yeah. The website is www.widowmakerlures.com. You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter as well. If you ever need anything, just shoot us a message through any of those platforms and we'll get back to you.
Awesome.
Great. Thanks, Brian.
All right.
Well, thank you guys. I definitely appreciate it. And We'll look forward to a good season.
This is the Hard Water Fishing Show with Jeff and Jason.
Jeff and Jason.
Just want to say a great thanks to Brian Oberfell from Widowmaker Lures for agreeing to do an interview with the Hardwater Show. And so it was great to have him on. And we will be back soon with the next episode, too. Thanks for listening. Cheers.
Thanks, everybody. Tight lines.
Five.
You've been listening to the Hardwater Fishing Show with Jeff and Jason.
Say goodbye.
One of the most unique podcasts on the planet, where we talk about tactics, gear, and ice fishing legends. We'll be back soon.
Bye-bye.
Till then, signing off.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.